This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Winnipeg off the draw. There's Scheifele. A shot. He scores! Mark Scheifele will end a drought that carried into 13 games. He ties it at one with a power play goal. For Pionk, wrist shot through traffic, deflected in front. They score! Mark Scheifele with his second power play goal. Scheifele moving right in. Let a shot go. He scores! Mark Scheifele with his third career NHL hat trick. It's 5-1 for the Jets. How you doing?
Our buddy Paul Edmonds with the call Thursday night in the nation's capital. The Winnipeg Jets defeating the Ottawa Senators by that 5-1 margin. They gave up the first goal of the game, then scored five unanswered, including the hat trick, as Mark Scheifele gets off the schneid in a significant manner. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba, for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app. We say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mundell. We're with you up until 9 a.m. this morning, bringing you the latest discussion and news surrounding the Winnipeg Jets as we sit a little bit more than 48 hours away from the trade deadline and a busy weekend of Winnipeg Jets games this afternoon into Philadelphia and then tomorrow afternoon into Buffalo. Both games, of course, available here on TSN Radio 1290. Gentlemen, good to see you Saturday morning, bright and early. I don't mind these shows when it's at least warm out and not frigid like some of the other 7 o'clock shows have been this year.
Yeah, and also when it comes really close to when the Jets acquire Cody Eakin and not too far gone from when they acquired Dylan DeMello. So it's always nice when we have a nice Friday trade to talk about. And, you know, there might be another trade or two coming up in the next couple of days, boys.
Which trade was it that was that happened during the show?
During the show was the Joel Armia, yeah, Steve Mason trade. One, right? Yeah. And then if you really want to go far back,
yep,
the Alexei Ponikarovsky trade.
Oh, Pony.
Where he was traded back to New Jersey.
What was that, like 2013?
2012? Yeah, I can't even remember exactly when. When he was traded back to New Jersey, remember the Jets signed him in the offseason. He didn't last long. They traded him back to New Jersey for a 7th round pick. That happened on an edition of NHL This Week, if you want to go way back into the Illegal Curve archives. In any event, we know the trade, the Cody Eakin trade that happened yesterday, the Dylan DeMello trade that happened a few days earlier. We'll talk about those trades throughout the course of the next 2 hours. We want to hear from you. You can send us your comments at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us in studio via Twitter. You can also do so via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. So let's look back at the week that was for the Winnipeg Jets. When we were last joined you last Saturday, the Jets were coming off that really bad defeat at home to the San Jose Sharks, if you recall. A game that the Jets had to have, and with that loss last Friday to the Sharks, they had fallen to 2-2 on that crucial 6-game homestand. Well, they bounced back well on Sunday, and they bounced back well on Tuesday, defeating the Blackhawks and defeating the Kings. And then, of course, on Thursday, they start the 4-game road trip by defeating the Ottawa Senators. So 4-2 on that 6-game homestand for the Jets. Good, not great, especially when you look at the points that were left on the board, particularly that San Jose game, because the New York Rangers are actually playing dynamite hockey right now. Mm-hmm. And then you look at, they start the road trip off with on a good foot by beating Ottawa pretty handily on Thursday night after giving up the opening goal. So I guess to sum up the week for the Jets, how would you describe it, Dave?
Well, I mean, you can't help but be happy with the way you're playing, obviously, and you know you're putting yourself into a playoff spot and back into contention. So I think that's a good thing. It seems, you know, from the reviews of Dylan DeMello, either before he played for the Jets and after the game after, since he's played, obviously it's only one game, was that was a home run. Everyone seems to be really pleased with the acquisition. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, him being in the East. With Ottawa, we haven't had a chance to really see him that much, but you know, clearly from what we saw, he was a good addition to the team, and you know, the acquisition of Eakin was a relatively low cost to try and help your fourth line maybe get a little bit of a little jump, a little energy. So overall, I think it was a pretty good week from a Jets perspective. You know, like I said, you know, you want to do those things to get yourself back into contention, and that's exactly what they did.
Right, and when you're looking at those three games that you mentioned, Drew, because you're right, when we were on last week talking about that San Jose game, you for sure left points on the board, and it was the way in which you lost, and even though these three games weren't dominant, and you might look at that score on Thursday night and you might say the Jets won 5-1, Scheif had the hat trick, you know, the Jets were really dominant. They really weren't. And, you know, the first 10 to 12 minutes of that first period was not great. And the starts for the Jets, I think, have been a concern. I'm not somebody that thinks that you necessarily have to score the first goal every game, but I think it's the way you play.
It's now, what, six games in a row where the Jets have given up the first goal? I think something like that, pretty close to that number at least.
Right, and it's not just the goal. It's the way they start off, right? Like, I didn't think they had a lot of jump. They weren't generating a lot of offense. But obviously, you know, the second and third period, you know, the Jets started to play better. But I think when you talk about going back to the Chicago game or even the LA game, I mean, those teams were in the game. And I thought, you know, considering, you know, that LA doesn't have Alec Martinez, right? Because they sat him out. Mm-hmm. They didn't have Tyler Toffoli. So that LA Kings team, it's basically Drew Doughty, Andre Kopitar, Dustin Brown, and everybody else, right? Like, they've got some nice players, but this is a team that they know they're going to be one of the bottom three teams in the Western Conference. They might even be at the very bottom. And for the record, I have no problem with that, guys. Like, if you're the New Jersey Devils, the Detroit Red Wings, Ottawa Senators, LA Kings, like, why would you want to finish any higher? Like, obviously, these guys have pride, but at the end of the day, you probably would take having better odds at the first overall pick, right? Like, you look at Alexis Lafreniere. What does he have, 99 points already? Like, he could end up with 130 points in the QMJHL. So you're just giving yourself a better chance at that first overall pick. But back to the Jets. I mean, yeah, you get three wins. That's all you want. And, you know, on that homestand, you'd like to have been 5-1 or 6-0. But, you know, you get the points. And these two games coming up here, boys, are going to be huge, because not only are they, you know, back to back, but this Philly Flyers team,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
This team probably, I think, is having one of the more underrated years, because
no question.
In that division, like, what are they, 5 points back of Washington or something? Like Philly is legit. And it's not a guarantee that they're going to make the playoffs, but when you look at that division, you say, okay, Pittsburgh, Washington.
Just how good the Metro's been this year.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've been dynamite at home, so this is going to be a big test. Carter Hart is playing really well. So, and we don't know, obviously, that it's going to be Carter Hart net, but regardless, Elliott's been pretty good as a backup. So, yeah, they get the wins against teams that they should have got wins. Was it pretty? I wouldn't say it was pretty. The game in Ottawa was definitely not pretty, but mm-hmm. Probably the best thing, guys, that happened was the Scheifele hat trick, right? Because you mentioned it, he gets off the schneid. He's been having all types of problems scoring goals. I don't think he's been playing poorly, because he's still, I think, playing well now that they're reunited with Blake Wheeler and Nikolai Ehlers. But the fact that Scheifele's putting the puck in the net and he did it three times, I think that's probably the best takeaway from that game.
Well, let's talk about the reuniting, Dave, of Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290, part of Birchwood Infinity, Nissan, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. So, Dave, let's talk about the reuniting. So, obviously, yep. You know, the experiment, which was, I guess, lasted a lot longer than an experiment usually does, of Wheeler up the middle is now over for at least the time being. He's right. On the wing next to Scheifele. Kopp up the middle on the second line. Roslovic up the middle on the third line. You know, do the Jets now have that balanced top nine scoring that they've been looking for all year, particularly as they went through the injury bug and as Brian Little has missed the vast majority of the year and we now know is going to be out for the entirety of the season? You know, that top nine for the Jets, is it now balanced enough that you think, okay, there's something here with this top nine and with Scheifele and Wheeler being reunited with Ehlers on the other side, as he refers to them, the Schwelers line?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, Blake Wheeler spoke about it after the last game here in Winnipeg, and he talked about how selfishly he loves playing with Mark Scheifele because it makes him a better player. And I think that natural chemistry that those two possess is evident, right? So you really do have an opportunity to get those two going, which isn't a bad thing. And obviously Blake Wheeler was doing well with, you know, Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor on that second line. But I think, like, naturally, he's a right winger. That's just his natural position. And I think with he and Mark Scheifele, I think it, you know, helps the two of them. Nikolai Ehlers has gotten going. He's scoring again, which is obviously important. The real question is with Andrew Kopp, can he do what is enough to be that second line center? Because I actually really like Jack Roslovic in his natural spot as a center on that third line with the class of 2015 line. I really think that those guys, being given an opportunity, they all play the game very similarly. And I think, well, not entirely similarly, but, you know, they have a lot of attributes and they complement each other. That's what I'm trying to say. And I think allowing Jack Roslovic to be in that natural center position for him, I think is going to be a really good thing for this team, because I think what it does do, Drew, is it does give you that opportunity for balance. Because I think the problem the Jets had with Adam Lowry in the third center position was that they just didn't have that offense. And I think with Jack Roslovic there, you have that offense that you need from the third line. I think when Adam Lowry's back, he slots back into that fourth line center role. And, you know, again, with Eakin, they could complement each other, so you never know how that sort of relationship would be. But I personally, I like it. I think Andrew Kopp brings a lot. I think defensively, he'll be good with Patrick Laine. Well, Patrick Laine has been very good defensively. Kyle Connor, not so much. But you at least will get those guys a defensive center who can get them the puck, who can do the digging in the corners that they may need to be able to get that puck on net. So I personally like this balance. I think it actually is, you know, I mean, it's not ideal. Andrew Kopp isn't ideally maybe your second line center, but I think giving him an opportunity, he's a smart player, giving him an opportunity to jump up, we'll see what he's got.
And Dave, there's no doubt in the short term that they're going to continue with these lines, right? Like Scheifele, mm-hmm. Ehlers, Wheeler, that's going to stay together. Kopp, mm-hmm. Laine, Connor, you know, class of 2015, Dave, I got to give you credit. You came up with that line name. That's going to stay together. The fourth line is completely in flux, right? Like
yeah.
Cody Eakin, it makes sense that you, like obviously Cody Eakin's not going to play this afternoon versus Philly. He might play tomorrow versus Buffalo, yeah. Dave, but like it makes sense to slot Cody Eakin there, right? And he can play center or wing. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you, Adam Lowry, it now makes sense. If you're going to have this new look up the middle, right, where Jack Roslovic has now switched from wing to center and Andrew Kopp is up on the second line. I mean, because you have that chemistry on the third line with Harkins and Appleton, mm-hmm. it makes sense to have Lowry as your fourth line. But it's going to be interesting to see, I think, let's say medium term, how these lines stay together, because obviously Scheifele, Wheeler, Ehlers, they've reconnected, right? Like they're good. The second line, we haven't necessarily seen enough of it. Like we've seen it in a small sample size. So that's the one, because mm-hmm.
that's the great unknown, I think, in this experiment.
That's the great unknown, right? Because if Andrew Kopp stays as your second-line center, Andrew Kopp's a great player. I mean, we've been talking about him for years. He's a very underrated player. Is he maybe better suited in a third-line role? I mean, that's up for debate. He can definitely play on your second line, especially when he's playing with snipers like Connor and Laine, right? Mm-hmm. And then he has that defensive responsibility that obviously Paul Maurice likes. He's that quote-unquote 200-foot player, but when Matty Perreault and Adam Lowry come back, like, is your fourth line going to be Eakin, Lowry, Perreault? I don't know, right? Like, there are a lot of unknowns when you talk about where everybody slots in when
and
the Jets get healthy.
And if that is their fourth line.
It's pretty right. good fourth line.
It's a pretty good fourth line. And sure. that's why I can't remember. It's been a few weeks since we've all been in the studio together. But, I mean, a few weeks ago I said, I think that's why Kevin Cheveldayoff might be a buyer at the trade deadline. Because I think he looked at his forward group and he said, you know what, if we can get fully healthy, and this is when I still thought Brian Little's return might be possible, yeah. but we know that's not now. But if they can get fully healthy, meaning Perreault and Lowry come back, you have a pretty good 12 forwards right there, mm-hmm. especially now that, you know, Roslovic, Harkins, and Appleton are playing so well together that you might have something there. And with the goaltending that you've received all season long,
right.
you know, get into the fight, you know, get into the be one of the top eight teams out of the West, and stranger things have happened. Mm-hmm. So that was always sort of what I wondered in the back of his mind. Did Kevin Cheveldayoff look at his team and say, you know, we're a couple of additions away? Mm-hmm. And the fact that they were able to make a couple of those additions, you know, DeMello primarily at a very good cost, because Cody Eakin, you know, whatever, he's had a lousy year for Vegas. I mean, you can't really sugarcoat that. Mm-hmm. But does a change of scenery turn things around for him? You know, it's worth the risk for Cody Eakin, I think.
Drew, these moves make you better, period, right? Like, they give you more depth. Cody Eakin is a better option than, you know, whether you want to say Andre Chibasov or Gabriel Bork, like just based on skill. I think we'd all
Logan
agree with
Shaw,
that, right?
I mean,
Dylan DeMello improves your defense, right? He gives you a better option as a second pairing defenseman. Mm-hmm. Top four, whatever you want to say, right? Because some people think that Josh Morrissey and Dylan DeMello might be paired up as opposed to Morrissey and Pullman, right? So these moves, and I agree with you. I mean, we knew the Jets were never going to be sellers, because what are they selling?
There wasn't anything to sell.
There's nothing to sell. And also, this team wants to get in the playoffs, and you can say whatever you want about the Jets and how good you think they are and whether they'll make the playoffs or not, but once you get into the playoffs, every team believes that they can go all the way, right? Like, no team makes the playoffs and says, well, we're just happy to be here.
The Jets from last week, prior to the DeMello acquisition and prior to the, you know, and obviously we don't know what the Eakin acquisition is going to bring, mm-hmm. but prior to the DeMello acquisition, the Jets team from last week, I think, was going to fight tooth and nail to just make it, and then they were first round fodder. I don't think that that team last week was going to be a team that had a ceiling above making it into the first round. After primarily the DeMelo acquisition, mm-hmm. and with finding this sort of new balance when it comes to at least your top nine forwards, I'm not fully ready to say that they're going to make a lengthy run in the playoffs, but I could see them winning a round if everybody gets healthy on the well, forward, I mean, group and everything.
Connor
else.
Hellebuyck playing the way he has this season, I mean, anything is possible once you get into the playoffs.
Time will tell. 20 games to go. The Jets have a difficult schedule over those next 20 games. We'll talk about that later on in the program as well. Before we go to break, not hockey related, curling related, as you'll appreciate this, I want to give a shout out to both the Canadian men's and the Canadian women's junior teams who represented Team Canada. They both won gold medal yesterday in Russia, yesterday and early this morning in Russia, depending on the time change. Both of the teams are from Manitoba, so that's Team Gauthier, skip Jacques Gauthier, third Jordan Peters, second Braden Payette, and lead Zachary Balakwa, pardon me if I'm mispronouncing anything. They represented Team Canada in the men's tournament. They won gold yesterday over Switzerland, and relatively moments ago, Team Canada women led by skip Mackenzie Zacharias, Lauren Lamentine, I got that right, I think, Carly Burgess, and Emily Zacharias, they won gold in the women's event as well. So Team Canada wins gold in the World Junior Curling Championships, both teams from Manitoba. Great job to those men and women for doing yeoman's work, bringing home gold medals from the World Junior Curling Championships in Russia. When we come back, more on the acquisition of Dylan DeMelo and Cody Eakin. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
If you didn't really like that game, then we're not going to be able to agree on anything. You know, like that, his sticks so many times knock things down. His passes are on the tape. That was a pure kind of, I don't know if you can call it coach's porn, but when you're watching hockey video, you know, that's pretty darn good.
It's a top shelf Mauriceism.
Yeah, it might be one of the best
quote ever.
It's pretty good. You can see the little, you can't see it obviously because we're on radio right now, but if you go back and you watch the video, you can sort of see the sly smile coming across his face as he's about to, as he's considering if he should say it, and then he says it, and then he's like, maybe I shouldn't have said it, but he knows he meant to say it.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. Anyways, that was Coach Paul Maurice talking about defenseman Dylan DeMelo's game after the Thursday night effort in Ottawa, the Jets' victory, of course. Jets back in action twice this weekend. This afternoon, in about just under 5 hours from now, there'll be puck drop in Philadelphia, City of Brotherly Love, against the Flyers, and then tomorrow afternoon against Sabres fan Dwayne and the Buffalo representatives. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Let's start with the DeMelo acquisition that happened, I guess, what was it, Tuesday, Wednesday?
Tuesday.
Yep. It happened, and it seems like it's one of those rare trades that is universally praised by those who believe in the eye test and those who believe in analytics. Both sides seem to come together in a kumbaya moment in praise of the acquisition of Dylan DeMelo at the very low cost of a third-round pick.
Right, and I don't want to toot my own horn, but last weekend you asked me who I preferred the Jets to acquire. Who did I say? Dylan DeMelo and Josh Manson, right? So you can go back and listen to the IC podcast. Obviously, you know, that was
yes, every now and then
Chevy doesn't
every
listen
now
to
and
us,
then the monkey hits the right key on the typewriter.
No, but I mean, the reason why I like DeMelo is a lot of the reasons why everybody likes DeMelo. And if you have a chance to pick up a Winnipeg Free Press today, Andrew Berkshire, or you can obviously, you know, read the article on illegalcurve.com in the morning papers, but yeah. Andrew Berkshire has
pick up a hard copy of the paper, too. Got to support local journalism
efforts.
I've
got one right here. I mean, I'm a journalism grad. Drew, I buy the odd newspaper. I've got one here.
You also bought wine gums at 6:30 in the morning.
Well, I didn't have time to get the Timbits, so.
Okay, go ahead.
So I brought the wine gums. I mean, that's what we do at 7:30 in the morning, Drew, as us washed up dads. But when you're talking about, you know, DeMelo, you hear this a lot, guys, but he really doesn't play a fancy game, right? Like, he's just a good, solid defender. And, you know, I mentioned the Berkshire article, and he just talks about, you know, how good he is at defending, right? Like puck battles, you know, stuff like that, right? And that's what he brings, solid defensive play. And if you think about it, that's something that's been lacking, right? Like, look at Dave right at the top. Like, Jacob Trouba was that prototypical shutdown defenseman who obviously, you know, has a good offensive side to his game. But I think that's probably what the Jets have been lacking the most in the top four. Not saying that Dmitry Kulikov can't play that role at times, but I just think Dylan DeMello does a better job. And so that's what you're going to get from DeMello. Yes, he only has, 10 points and they're all assists, but that's not why the Jets acquired him. Chevy acquired him to make this group better defensively, and that has been a sore spot. So you're talking about special teams. Yeah, the penalty kill hasn't been great. Has it been better? Yeah, since the start of the season, yeah, it's been better. But yeah, you only give up a third round pick, and I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, everybody liked the trade, because people were thinking that even, you know, it would be a high second round pick.
Well, you look at the other defensemen that have been traded this week. So, I mean, Andy Green goes to the Islanders for a second round pick. That's inexplicable, by the way. I mean, Andy Green.
It's a lot to give up for Andy Green, who's at the end of his career.
No
right?
question. So. Alec Martinez goes from LA to Vegas for two second round picks.
Right.
Brendan Dillon goes from San Jose to Washington for a second round pick and something else, I believe. I think either a conditional pick or a prospect. I mean, the price to pay for other defensemen was higher than this, and DeMello has, you know, performed and has as much upside as a lot of these guys.
Well, I think the key is he provides for the Jets exactly what they need, to Ezzie's point. I think, and that's the steadiness of a player who's going to kill the play when it needs to be killed and do the things that right now seem to be lacking on that Jets blue line. So I think, you know, you read Murat wrote a really good article for The Athletic breaking down shift by shift every one of the...
Yeah, you should subscribe to The Athletic, too, while we're in a good mood.
Right, why not? But let's just give everybody a shout-out. You can read all the links. But it's just interesting, because if you read all of the headlines, just the headlines alone, it really just speaks to what this player brings, which is that presence on the blue line that it appears that the Jets are lacking. And again, it's not an offensive presence, but you know what the reality is? The Jets don't need offense from the blue line. They really don't. That's not their biggest Achilles heel.
Well, they're not built like that anymore, right?
Right.
Like, when you had Dustin Byfuglien and Jacob Trouba and Tyler Myers, there was a completely different look to your defense last year, right? Like, sure. We know that the Jets have changed their style of play, right? So when Dave talks about that, I mean, and this is, you know, we're jumping from article to article here, but, you know, Andrew Berkshire is a really good writer, and he talks about how, you know, the Jets are the third worst team in the league when it comes to turnovers. So when you have a defenseman who's really efficient, and that is probably the word that I would use to describe DeMello, right? Like, he's just a good, solid, efficient defenseman. Like, that's what he is. He moves the puck well. He's a good skater. He's just a smart defenseman. And so I think the Jets really coveted that. And I think Alec Martinez was a guy that they were looking at. And then, you know, you heard reports from Darren Dreger that, you know, Brendan Dillon, also a very good defenseman. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're paired up with Brent Burns or Erik Karlsson, like, you're a good defenseman. Alec Martinez,
you know,
same
role.
Thing. And yeah. I realize, you know, Alec Martinez's underlying numbers haven't been as good. Like, you know, the LA Kings are not a good team, but his numbers weren't good last year.
That's what I think is so...
But Dylan DeMello's underlying numbers, like...
On a terrible team. I think that's what's so impressive about DeMello, is that his numbers, you know... Are his underlying numbers, right. His analytical numbers are impressive playing for an Ottawa Senators team that is not very good. They're an Ottawa Senators team that is towards the bottom, of course, of the NHL standings. So he's succeeded in spite of a lot of the talent, in spite of a lot of the teammates that are around him.
DeMello was basically their second best defenseman. Like, Thomas Chabot is their best defenseman, even though he's only 20 years old or 21 years old. But DeMello, so you acquire a team's second best defenseman, regardless if, you know, the team is a bottom five team or not. I mean, I think that's a very prudent move by Chevy to not have to give up anybody on the active roster. You're not actually giving up a player. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you've now given up your a third round pick, a fourth round pick that can become a third round pick, but you've made your team better. Going back to last segment, that's all this is about. It's very simple that these two moves make the Jets better. on defense and at forward. It gives them more depth. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody thought the Jets were going to acquire, you know, Chris Kreider or, you know, somebody like that. The Jets don't need a top six forward. They needed to bolster their bottom six, and they needed to bolster their top four on D, and that's what they did.
Let me ask you guys this about what this does to the deployment of the defense and the pairings of the defense, and particularly Sammy Nikku. So you go down the right side now, and it's pretty clear that you're going to go Pionk, Poolman, DeMelo in whatever order, in no particular order. And then your left side, it seems like it's obviously Morrissey and it's Beaulieu and it's Kulikov. So what of Sammy Nikku right now for the Winnipeg Jets? Assuming, of course, that the Jets are healthy on the back end, which has not been the case at all this season. Right. So let's assume for argument's sake that they stay healthy. Does that mean Sammy Nikku is in the press box? Is he your seventh defenseman for the remainder of the season? Or could you foresee a situation where Sammy Nikku goes back to playing the left side, that would be his quote-unquote natural side, even though he prefers the right side, and maybe a guy like Dmitry Kulikov comes out of the lineup because of his shortcomings?
Yeah, I mean, I could absolutely see it. I mean, Paul Maurice hasn't shown a tremendous amount of love for Sammy Nikku, so I think that, you know, he may not be so inclined. You could see Sammy Nikku maybe coming in for Tucker Poolman, you know, who probably, I'm going to assume, is going to shift down to that third pairing, most likely.
Yeah.
So maybe you pull Nikku in to give him some playing opportunities, or for Beaulieu. I mean, it's not a huge likelihood, I don't think, based on the way Paul Maurice has deployed him so far. And you know what? Look, at the end of the day, like, Sammy Nikku wouldn't be the end of the world if he has to just sit there for a bit and bide his time and work his way back into that lineup. But I just think, like, it's probably not likely, given the coaching history, to see him, you know, playing over Pionk or Poolman or DeMelo.
Right, and it remains to be seen what those exact pairs are going to be, guys, because I know what you're saying, Drew. I mean, it goes back to what I said before. I have all day for a Josh Morrissey, Dylan DeMelo top pair, right? And I'm not sure if that means, like Dave said, does Tucker Poolman maybe move to your third pair? Is it Nathan Beaulieu and Poolman? Is it Kulikov and Poolman? Like, I don't love that pair, so I think you definitely have some work to do. I definitely don't want to see Sammy Nikku in the press box for the majority of the rest.
There's 20 games left in the regular season.
So, I mean, we don't expect him to play today and or tomorrow, but and Lucas Ibiza right now is out of the lineup, and I don't expect him to necessarily be back in the lineup as soon as he's ready to go.
I also don't think
that Nathan Beaulieu has necessarily played head and shoulders better than Dmitry Kulikov either. So it could be Nathan Beaulieu that comes out of the lineup.
Time will tell. The Jets now have more depth on defense, and it's not just guys off the waiver wire, so the decisions will get a little bit more complicated as they enter the final 20-game stretch of the regular season. The 20-game stretch of the regular season begins this afternoon in Philadelphia as the Jets will meet the Flyers. When we come back, Flyers writer Anthony Sanfilippo joins us to talk about the team from Philadelphia. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio, 7:30 in the morning. Next Saturday's show will be fun, guys. It's our first ever, I believe, Leap Day show. You know, next Saturday being the 29th of February doesn't come along that often. So, I don't know. Ezzy, you should bring in a cake or something special for that occasion.
Did you know that leap years are actually once every 4 years?
Yes. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, I was like, that's
a pretty... It used to be you could keep track that the Olympics and the leap years would be always at the same time, but then they made the Olympics every 2 years instead. But thank you for that information.
But the Olympics are every 2 years, so there's always going to be either the winter or summer.
I'm saying it used to be the Olympics. The winter and summer Olympics used to be in the same year.
This is fascinating.
It is fascinating. Let's go to the hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
From crossingbroad.com, we're pleased to be joined by our very good friend, Anthony Sanfilippo. Anthony covers the Philadelphia Flyers. How are you, good sir?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic on this beautiful Saturday morning down here in Philadelphia.
That's good. Thank you for waking up bright and early with us to talk about the Philadelphia Flyers, a team, Anthony, that I have to say I don't think is getting the respect that they deserve. And I was flipping through crossingbroad.com and noticed your latest article from yesterday. And the headline was, "Wake up and take notice. Flyers are very good." Are they getting enough credit throughout the NHL?
I don't think they are. Maybe it's not. They're not. Maybe the other teams are respecting them and know how good they are. But I don't think that in the media that they're really kind of getting the respect that they deserve. They're tied for the seventh best record in the NHL. They've moved to within 6 points of first place in the Metropolitan Division, which is easily the best division in the NHL this year. When you look at the teams and their records, and they're playing a great brand of hockey that wins. It's a defensive system. It's very some people might think it's boring, but it's successful. Other teams have a hard time generating chances against the Flyers, and they're in every game. And it's a really there's a couple of really good players, obviously, in Claude Giroux and Jake Voracek and Travis Konecny, but nobody who's like a standout superstar, in the points race. And so maybe that's kind of the reason why, they're kind of flying under the radar a little bit. But this is a really good team. And it kind of came out, it kind of surprised even me. I kind of thought that they were, going to battle for one of the wild cards in the Eastern Conference. And they still kind of are because the division and the conference is so close. But at the same time, they're better than most every team out west. They have a great record against teams with better records than them. They have a great record at home. They have a great record in the division. I mean, there's just a lot of things to like about the Flyers right now. And they're really young for the most part, and they're up and coming. So I think there's a reason for people to start getting excited about hockey in Philadelphia again, maybe for the first time in about 8 years.
Anthony, you mentioned Claude Giroux there in your answer, and that's who I wanted to ask you about. And I agree. You look at his point totals. He's got, I think, 47 points. And you're saying, okay, well, Claude Giroux's having an okay year. But he's actually on a seven-game point streak, and he's got, I believe, 12 points in those seven games. Picked up that huge goal last game against Columbus. How much of the Flyers' recent hot streak is the result of Claude Giroux's great play? Because you forget, it was just a couple of years ago, he had a 100-point season.
Yeah, no, so Giroux has had a down year, but it's mostly because there was a good stretch of the season where they had to move him back to center. And although he played most of his career as a center, a couple of years ago when he had that 100-point season, he was moved onto left wing. And it's more, once you hit that 30-year-old plateau and you're not a big, strong guy, which Giroux's not, your body starts to take a toll on your body to play center a little bit. So to put him on the wing, he's able to stay healthier, stay fresher, and he's able to score with a little bit more regularity. And because he had to play so much center for much of the season because of injuries and the like, he really started to have a down year. Ever since they moved him back onto the wing, now you're starting to see the production come again. And I think that you're going to see a consistent Claude Giroux from this point forward, for the rest of the season. Maybe not a 12 points in seven games pace the rest of the way. He had 21 games left. I don't think he's going to get another 36 points in those 21 games. But I do think you're going to see him pretty much be a point-per-game player at least moving forward through the rest of the regular season.
Anthony, with the Flyers being a bit of a surprise team right now, what do you think they're going to do when it comes to the trade deadline on Monday?
I don't think that they're going to do much of anything, and I think that that's a good thing. When you look around right now, I mean, obviously there's still 48 hours, well, a little bit more than 48 hours to go, and all the conversation for the names that are out there is asking for first-round draft picks, and I don't think Chuck Fletcher wants to give up a first-round draft pick. A lot of the Flyers prospects, they had a really good prospect pool coming into the season, but a lot of them have made their NHL debuts this year. Some are really decent contributors on the roster for the full season, and so therefore the cupboard is not bare by any stretch of the imagination, but it thinned out a little bit. And so I think that Chuck Fletcher wants to keep those high draft picks to continue to restock it. I don't think that they're going to make a trade for a rental if they have to give up a high draft pick. Now, might they add a like real depth piece, like a seventh defenseman or a, you know, 12, 13 forward? I think that's possible, but I really don't see a need. I'll tell you the one thing I think that they might keep an eye on. Let's see what happens with the Zach Bogosian situation. I think that's a real possibility there. But other than that, I don't think that there's much of anything that the Flyers will get involved with prior to the 3 o'clock deadline on Monday.
Anthony Sanfilippo is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. Anthony covers the Flyers for CrossingBroad.com, one of our all-time favorites here on the program. Anthony, you look at a guy like Travis Konecny, and he's already set career highs in terms of points. He's going to set career highs in goals sooner rather than later. Is he beginning to affirm himself in his fourth full NHL season as an upper echelon top three forward?
Yeah, I do think so. I think that, you know, there's a lot to like about the way TK plays the game. He's got a little bit of Brad Marchand in him. He's not as annoying as Marchand, but he's got that kind of edge where he really kind of, he's a chirper. He gets under the skin of the other team, but he's really productive and effective. As a player, guys, he's got really good wheels. He's not afraid, even though he's a smaller guy, he's not afraid to get into the greasy areas and tip pucks in. If you look at his last few goals, it's all been with a defenseman hanging on him, right out in front, just getting his stick on a puck and tipping it into the net. So, for a little guy, like I compare him, I think it's a combination of Marchand and like a Danny Briere type. He's got that offensive skill of Briere and that testiness of Marchand. You combine the two together, and I think that that's what you're getting out of Konecny. And I think that he's ultimately going to be, and he'll finish this season somewhere, in the 60s in points. And I think that he's even got room to get better than that. I think he's ultimately going to be like a 75 point player, on a consistent basis. That's a great thing, for a winger on this team. I think that, he's asserting himself as a leader on the ice, and I think he's ultimately going to be a leader in that locker room. Being only 22 years old, there's a lot to like about Travis Konecny.
Anthony, you mentioned earlier you don't think the Flyers are going to be very active. One of those players that you didn't mention is Shane Gostisbehere. He's with Lehigh Valley right now on a conditioning stint after that arthroscopic knee surgery. Is this a player maybe that is going to benefit from that time off? And the Flyers are hoping, obviously, maybe that goes without saying, that they're hoping that this time off is going to help him and maybe just get away from the game a little bit. He's had some pretty well-documented struggles, and then he's going to come back and he's going to start playing better, and maybe these trade rumors will be in the rearview mirror.
I don't know what's going to happen with Ghost because, ever since he's been out of the lineup, this defense has been excellent. And they're not going to touch it. I mean, the three pairs right now have been, unless somebody gets hurt, the three pairs have been really, really good. Niskanen and Provorov up top. The middle pair, which is their young guys, Travis Sanheim and Phil Myers, they've really started to develop and grow and make, they still make the occasional mistake, but they're playing really well. And that third pair of Justin Braun and Robert Haig, they block a ton of shots. They play a more physical game. They don't allow players in front of the net into, high percentage scoring areas. So it's a really nice combination of defensemen that the Flyers have. And ever since, Gostisbehere got hurt and Haig came back into the lineup full time, it's been really good. So I don't see them trying to pigeonhole Gostisbehere back into the lineup unless there's an injury to put him in. So he's really got to be willing to accept the fact when he's done with his conditioning stint with the Phantoms that he's a seventh defenseman with this team right now. And if he doesn't like that, then I think that there's a possibility that the Flyers try and move him, if not by the deadline on Monday, then definitely in the offseason. I don't think he's in the plan to get back into the lineup unless somebody gets hurt or starts to falter. And it's kind of a surprise because obviously of his how good of a player he was a couple of seasons ago when he had 65 points, but to fall off that quickly, that precipitously, is pretty surprising.
You know, Anthony, just one more question for me on Goss Despair. You mentioned he was a Calder Trophy finalist. I think he had, it was 50 points or 55 points in that year. And, you know, he was being praised, you know, a good young puck rushing defenseman. Like what's happened there? Is it confidence? Is it something else? Because, you know, the fact that you're saying that he might end up being a seventh defenseman when he's healthy would be pretty surprising to hear from a lot of people, right?
Yeah, I think I don't necessarily know that he completely fell off. He was never a great defensive defenseman, right? He was a little bit more of a one-trick pony, and then everybody always thought that he was a really fast skater, but he's not. He's a shifty skater. He's not slow, but he's not like elite speed. He's more of a guy who, I compare him to a basketball player who has a good crossover, right? I mean, I think that's kind of how he skates, and so he can make you miss when he's skating the puck. And so, I mean, there's a lot to like about his game, but it is a one-way game for sure. He's not as good in his own end. He loses a lot of 50-50 battles, and even did when he was putting up a lot of points. But you kind of accepted the flaws in his game because he was so good offensively. Once that kind of dried up, and that's really been the thing that the Flyers have not been able to figure out with him, is where has the offense gone? His shot has not been as accurate in the last two seasons as it was prior. He doesn't get as many pucks on net. He doesn't, he tries to do too much sometimes. Instead of, you know, finding the open man and make a pass, he tries to force a play. So those kinds of things have saw as why his production numbers are down. But without those, he's just a guy. He's just a guy in your lineup. And I think that's where the drop-off has been for him. If you're putting up 65 points a season, you can deal with some mistakes in your own end. But if you're only putting up 4 goals and, you know, 11 assists, then those mistakes are not going to cut it in your lineup.
You know, Anthony, the Flyers look like they've, for the most part, have used a goaltending tandem of Hart and Elliott. How has that worked, and how has Hart been in his second year as a pro?
Yeah, he's been really good. I mean, he did have the injury. He had an abdominal injury where he missed three weeks, but it came during the Flyers' bye week and the All-Star break, so he didn't really miss a lot of games. But Elliott played pretty well in his place. The one thing I will say, you know, Hart's been really good, especially at home. He's been excellent at home, but he's only got one win on the road since November 10th, and that's a little bit troubling. And I think that's something that the Flyers want to see get corrected. Here as we move into March, that's when they don't play another road game this month. So as they get into March, they're going to give Hart a few starts on the road and see him maybe get some confidence in road games. I think that's the one thing that's needed for him. Otherwise, he's been fine, and he's going to be the guy come playoff time. But Alain Vigneault told me, we had him on our podcast at the beginning of the season, and we were talking about Carter Hart, and he reminded us that, you know, he's only 21 years old. And he said, listen, the days of Martin Brodeur starting 72 games are long behind us. He said the percentage is now down somewhere closer to 60-40, and he said he wouldn't be even surprised if a lot of teams go 55-45 if they have a good tandem in goal. So it's more to keep the goalies fresh and energized and ready, so that way when you get to March and April and then obviously into the playoffs, your number one guy is in elite shape and ready to go. And so I think that's kind of been the Flyers' approach with their goaltending tandem, and it's worked out pretty well so far.
Anthony Sanfilippo covers the Philadelphia Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. He's one of our favorites. You can tune into the Press Row Show. Is that, did I get that right, Anthony?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, we do the Press Row Show before each home game and at each intermission, and you can do that through my Twitter or through the Crossing Broad Twitter, even on YouTube, Facebook. I mean, we have places.
TikTok, Instagram, you're everywhere.
Yeah, we're everywhere.
Anthony, thanks so much for joining us, buddy.
Hey, anytime, guys.
Take care. When we come back, we talk more about this weekend's games, and we look ahead to the final 20 games of the Winnipeg Jets regular season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan. Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
I don't really watch it that much.
obviously I know there's names out there. I got buddies that are in positions that probably won't be on the same team, so more or less I'll follow them. But, you know, we got a job to do here. I can't be worrying about the outside.
Jets defenseman Nathan Beaulieu. He won't be paying much attention to the NHL trade deadline come Monday. That, of course, Monday coverage of the trade deadline day all day long here on TSN Radio 1290. Do you believe players when they say that?
No. No, because think about it. What do these guys do? I mean, they've got nothing but time after practice. They'll flip their show, the TV on, or the. I mean, you can't help it, right? Like, yeah. If you're bombarded by it. I mean, even, you know, chat groups or Twitter or whatever, all these
TikTok.
Guys are paying, yeah, TikTok, all these guys are paying attention to
that, we can so. Agree we're all way too old for TikTok, right? Like, my wife Naomi was asking me what TikTok was, and yeah. I'm like, TikTok is something that I'm too old for.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, what is it, 10-second videos?
I think so. I mean, I really can't quite grasp what it is.
The end of the legal curve was, in terms of social media, was when Ezzy tried to get us a Periscope account.
Well, nobody does Periscope.
I know, but you tried.
Like, you told me to start a Periscope account.
No, not
account.
Me. It wasn't me.
Well, somebody told me to start a Periscope account, and like, I think Remus back in the day
for sure,
was
Remus.
Into Periscope, and so I started a Periscope account, and I was like, what the hell do I do with this?
I can't answer that
like,
question.
I remember the pierogi contest was on Periscope.
Well,
like, Huss and Remus had that on there. But like, what are we going to put on there? Nobody wants to see us on Periscope.
There's a reason why we're on radio. There's no question about that. So yes, I don't know what TikTok is, aside from even more of a waste of time than social media generally is.
Mm-hmm. TikTok, now, your time is ticking as a host, Drew.
Now, if you need me, I'm going to be outside screaming at clouds as an old man yelling at clouds. This segment of the show, should mention, brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated, has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. Hang on, let me carry the one, add a couple. Yeah, 35 years. How's that for some simple math real quick? Mm-hmm. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall. So the Jets, we know they're into Philly this afternoon. They're into Buffalo tomorrow afternoon. Both games here on TSN Radio 1290. They have 20 games to go in the standings now. They're in a playoff spot as of today. Got a decent night on the out-of-town scoreboard. Nashville losing to the Chicago Blackhawks in overtime, so Nashville's only able to gain 1 point. Minnesota Wild defeating the Edmonton Oilers last night as well. So the Jets in the playoff spot, pending the action from later on today between the Flames, the Coyotes, the Jets themselves.
Well, and you didn't mention Boston beat Calgary.
Boston beat Calgary, right? Yes.
So that
exactly.
helps the Jets, too.
That does help the Jets. So they're in the first wild card spot. They got 20 games to go. What's the record? What do they need to do? What number of wins do you think the Jets need in order to be a playoff team? I know what the sports club stats say, and so I'll tell you that in a second. But of the next 20 games, how many wins do the Jets need?
Well, they basically need to go maybe just above 500. We talked about this a few weeks back, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when we were previewing that 6-game homestand, Dave, we said, like, if the Jets go 5-1 or 4-2, mm-hmm. right? Like, obviously, 4-2 was going to change the odds, right?
Yeah.
We basically said, like, if the Jets can win 60% of these games, which they did, right? Mm-hmm. They only have to go 500. So, I mean, I don't know if it's going to be exactly 500, but it's probably going to take somewhere between 91 and 93 points to get into the playoffs, right? So if you do the math, that means they're probably going to have to win 9 or 10 games.
If they go 10-9-1, so meaning if they get to, that would give them right to 90 point total. If they go 10-9-1, the odds the Jets will make the playoffs are 52.5%. Now that's basically flipping a coin.
A chance.
I'm saying there's a chance, but I'm saying that's also flipping a coin. If they really want to make sure, then that target number for them to get to is 92, 93 points,
so
even 91
you're
points.
You're talking about 11 wins then.
11 wins, yeah.
Right?
If you can get up to 11 wins over your final 20 games, that's usually going to, that should be enough for the Jets to make the playoffs based on the sports club stats who do all the fancy math
right.
around that.
And that's not that much above, like that's what I was saying, right? Like it's slightly above 500. Like you have to win like whatever it is, 52, 53% of your games.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to get points in probably around 55% of your games, right? So it's not impossible. The only issue is that the Jets' schedule in March is not easy, right? Like, we went over this. Like, only 3 of those 13 games are against non-playoff teams, and you've got Washington twice next week. So it's not like the Jets' schedule is going to be as easy as it has been for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, but the reality is, if you want to be a playoff team, you got to fight your way to get in. I mean, that's just what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. You can't just say, hey, we got to have easy games to get us in there. I mean, the reality is you put yourself into this situation, and we talked about it because of what they were able to do in November. to bank a lot of points. They've given themselves that opportunity. But the problem is because they had the fall off, you know, now you're playing catch up and, you know, you're pretty far behind Dallas. You're not, you went 7 points back of Dallas, who's in third right now. It's not insurmountable, but it's not exactly easy with all the teams, you know, a lot of teams going and playing, you know, extra time. And
yeah, Dallas has a game in hand. I mean, again, it's wild card or bust, more or less. I think we've all agreed to that effect for the Winnipeg Jets.
St. Louis won't finish any worse than second in the Central. They'll most likely win the Central. And what's interesting is if you look at that schedule in March, and I was looking at this before the show, if you look at it between March 9th and March 27th, the Jets have 9 games.
Mm-hmm. So it's a heavy schedule is what you're saying.
No, pardon me. The Jets have...
Yeah, 9 games between March 9th and March 27th.
Yeah, 9 games. And out of those 9 games, guys, 8 of those 9 games are against teams that are in the Western Conference in that playoff race. So you're talking about Arizona, Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, Florida obviously doesn't count, Minnesota, Dallas, Nashville, and Colorado.
Right.
Now, Colorado and Dallas are obviously ahead of the Jets, second and third in the Central, but they're not exactly like head and shoulders above right. the Jets. So that's where I think that is make or break time in the schedule. Because I agree with Dave.
7 of the Jets, 20 games. So the Jets, as I mentioned, have 20 games left. Only 7 of those games are against current non-playoff teams. Mm-hmm. And in terms of really bad teams, because there are some really bad teams, 2 of them are against really bad teams. Those are the 2 games they have against the Sabres tomorrow afternoon and then next week after next Tuesday, I believe it is, a week from Tuesday after mm-hmm. the Washington game. So aside from those 2 games against the Buffalo, all their remaining games are either against playoff teams or teams that are certainly still on the fringes of the playoff race. Minnesota being on the fringes of the race, Florida fighting tooth and nail in the East as well.
Yeah, and I mean, the Jets end the season on the road against Calgary, Colorado, mm-hmm. and Arizona. And it's possible, guys, that it's similar to 2015 when the Jets faced the Ducks in the first round. Like, it's possible it's going to come down to those last 2 or 3 games, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Dave makes a good point. I mean, the Jets are in the fight right now. They're currently in a playoff spot. Yes, Nashville has a couple games in hand. They're 4 points back, I believe, or 3 points back. That's one team that kind of scares me a little bit. If you're looking in your rearview mirror, sorry, Dave is correcting me, it's 3 points back. And obviously, you have to, just having games in hand doesn't matter unless you do something with them. But the point is,
which Nashville hasn't been able to do so far this year.
But you're talking Calgary, you're talking Edmonton. Mm-hmm. I mean, Vegas has started to pull ahead a little bit, but really it's, you know, between the Jets and the Predators and even the Hawks and the Wild are still in there.
Yeah, they're right on the, they're on the fringes more so, but you're absolutely right. It's 20 games to go. It's the stretch run. The Jets are going to have to earn it if they're going to achieve it. It starts this afternoon in Philadelphia, continues tomorrow afternoon in Buffalo. Both games available here on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, TSN hockey analyst, MSG hockey analyst, Marty Biron joins us. We'll touch on the Sabres. We'll touch on the trade deadline. Much more to come. You're listening to Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number 2 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
You know him as a Buffalo Sabres analyst. You know him as a TSN hockey analyst. He's a good friend of our program. Marty Biron joins us on the line. Marty, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, good. Marty. Thanks so much for joining us on this Saturday morning. The Jets into Buffalo tomorrow afternoon to meet the Sabres. And, of course, trade deadline day coming up on Monday. So we'll talk about both of those issues and those topics with you. You know, Marty, as somebody who covers the Sabres, I had higher hopes for them this year. Ralph Kruger behind the bench I thought was going to be a great hire. You know, and it's another disappointing year in Buffalo. It's another lost season in Buffalo. No playoffs, clearly. You know, I don't know if you heard the rant from a few weeks ago by that Sabres fan named Dwayne who called in to the radio station to lament the state of the franchise. If you're a Sabres fan, where is hope coming from right now?
Well, I mean, you got to take a look at the overall picture. And I get that, you know, it's been a disappointing season when you consider the fact that you started the season again really, really good. So you look at last year, a 10-game winning streak, and you're first in the NHL, and everybody's talking about playoffs. It obviously didn't happen this year. You know, you start the season really good. I think they were 9-1-1, and then again you go into a tailspin that is not a good one. The one thing, though, is I don't think this roster has got the pieces to a successful playoff team. And that's just for me, when you look at the depth that the Sabres have. All season, they struggled between having to play seven defensemen because they had an amount of defensemen that they needed to play them. So they would play seven defensemen, 11 forwards. You know, it breaks the rhythm a little bit. It breaks the consistency you're trying to build on. So it's been I don't want to say a bad season because they're still playing, you know, for a game over 500. They're still somewhat in a situation where they would be okay moving forward. But I don't think anybody thought the Buffalo Sabres were going to get 96, 97 points this year. Now, if they finish the season strong and get to 88, 89, maybe 90, then good. Okay, you finished the season strong. Everything was fine. You've got Jack Eichel, which is he's a stud. You've got Victor Olofsson, who can score goals and is a really pleasant surprise as a rookie. Sam Reinhart's played really well. You've got Rasmus Dahlin. You found a defenseman in Henry Jokiharju in the trade with Alex Nylander to Chicago. You've got Colin Miller playing better, Brandon Montour, Rasmus Ristolainen. You've got pieces. It's just you need depth at forward, and you're going to have a ton of forwards that are going to be coming off the books this summer through free agency. So I think that's when you can definitely make a difference in the direction you're going.
Marty, you know, talking about the defenseman, obviously, you know, about 24 hours ago, Zach Bogosian, he's officially terminated, you know, by the Sabres, part of that huge trade between the Jets and Sabres. I guess that was going back 6 years. Do you expect anybody to pick Zach Bogosian up? And, you know, just how unfortunate is it for Bogosian to end this way? Because obviously nobody saw his tenure in Buffalo ending this way.
Well, I mean, Zach has been injured, right? So, I mean, he's dealt with really big injuries. He's missed a ton of time, and he's getting older. He's 29, will be 30 this summer. And with the injuries, it slowed down his game. So, I mean, there's things that Zach Bogosian can bring to the game. He can bring physicality. He can give you depth. But the Sabres, again, they have a ton of this on defense. They're better off playing their youth and letting them get experience. You call up a guy like Lawrence Pilot, you make him play. You may even play John Gilmore on defense. You've got youth on defense, so that's where you have to focus your energy moving forward. They thought when Zach came back from his injury at the start of the season that maybe he was going to be able to fit in nicely in the top four role, and it hasn't worked. So now You turn around and you look at your different options. It's unfortunate that it has to come down to, okay, we're going to terminate your contract. But at the same time, I think both sides are doing each other a favor. The Sabres are doing Zach Bogosian a favor because by terminating his contract, he can sign before Monday, 3 o'clock with any team. He could sign a 1-year deal worth $700,000, which will be worth about $200,000 to finish the season. With a team, it's very little money under the cap, and a lot of teams will be able to fit him in. Because the Sabres tried to trade him, but nobody could fit in Zach Bogosian with the $5.1 million. Even if the Sabres were going to eat half of it and retain 50% of the salary, it just didn't work. The other side is Zach Bogosian is doing a little bit of a favor to the Buffalo Sabres. Instead of just reporting to Rochester and saying, okay, I'm going to be a $4 million cap hit on the Buffalo Sabres, salary cap numbers, I'm just going to not report. You're going to have to terminate me, and you're going to save $4 million on your cap. So I think both sides are doing each other a favor here. It's unfortunate. It's come to that, but it's a business, and I think it's going to work out better for Bogosian. It's going to work out better for the Sabres. It just it needed to run its course.
No, Marty, one player I want to ask you about, I feel like I asked you about him all the time when we had you on last year, is Victor Olofsson. He obviously had a really good first season in North America with Rochester, and he's continued in his rookie season here in Buffalo. This season, I think he has 19 goals, 21 assists, third in rookie scoring, having played the least games in that top five. So just how pleasant a surprise has he been, or are you not surprised, and what has he been able to do successfully this season?
Well, I'm pleasantly surprised with a few things. Once, I knew he could score. I knew he had the shot. What did he score? 7 straight power play goals to start the season. That was a league record. Nobody had ever done that to start a career, 7 straight power play goals. And, you know, so you know he could score on the power play. But now what we're seeing is really how important, how impactful he is to Jack Eichel and Jack Eichel's success. Victor Olofsson is really quick through the neutral zone. He's got great vision. It looks now like teams have paid attention to Victor Olofsson, and they said, hey, we better keep an eye on this kid. It allows Jack Eichel and also Sam Reinhart to be able to play with a little bit more room at time and space. So I absolutely love the kid, and I know he was great in Rochester, he was great in Sweden, but he's also a fantastic, down-to-earth person that understands he has to work hard, he has to put in his dues. He was given a spot on the first power play and on Jack Eichel's line, but he's not just sitting down saying, hey, that's the way it should be. He understands that was a very unique situation and he wants to keep it going. When he was injured, he came to the rink with a big smile every day. It's not easy. You're injured. You've got an ankle injury. You don't know when you come back if it's going to be working well, if there's going to be pain, if the mechanics are going to be the same. But he would still come back to the rink, have a big smile, do his rehab, go through the workouts, and be a positive, person around the locker room. So I think that's very important, especially as a young kid coming in an organization that's had their trouble over the last few years, to bring in some positivity in the mix. And he's got all the tools, and I think if he plays with Jack Eichel, we could see Victor Olofsson hitting 40 goals at one point, because that shot is super, super hot.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Marty as an MSG and TSN hockey analyst. You're listening to Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. Marty, moving away from the Sabres and to Monday's NHL trade deadline, we've heard a couple clips throughout the course of the show about how players aren't really paying attention, or at least they claim not to be paying attention to the trade deadline, and that's something that they can't control, so it's something they don't worry about. In your experience in dressing rooms, how much truth is that in there, or do players actually pay more attention to the deadline than they let on in public?
Well, there is players that don't even watch hockey, believe it or not. There's players that you walk in the room the next day and you said, oh my goodness, did you see that Nick Foligno goal last night between the legs? And they're going to be like, what? No, I don't. I didn't watch the highlights. I don't watch hockey. There's players that have no interest, so the trade deadline coming to them is just like any other day, and they don't worry about it. Now, I'm a big fan of the game. I watch a lot of the games myself. So I would come into the locker room on trade deadline day, and I would turn all the TVs on to TSN, and I'd be like, let's go, what's happening? So much so that when I was traded on deadline day, we were in Toronto. We were getting ready to play the Leafs that night, showed up to the morning skate, turned on all the TVs on TSN in the locker room, in the lounge, in the change room, in the trainer's room. And I'm starting to get dressed, and then Lindy Ruff called me over to his office, and I thought I was in trouble. I thought he was going to say, hey, we have a game to play tonight. Like, what are you doing? Turn those TVs off, focus on the game, and let's go. I was told, like, then that I was going to get traded, and so to just get undressed and go back to the hotel. But there is definitely players that pay attention to it. It's kind of funny. Some guys are in all the trade rumors, and they want to know about themselves. They want to know, where am I being rumored to? But I'll tell you this, it's extremely exhausting. Most of the agents are going to tell you, don't look at social media. Don't go on Twitter. Don't read social media. These rumors are unlikely to happen. But I still think it's fun. It's part of the game, you know. Get involved. If you're a player and you love your game, follow along, see what's going on, have an opinion on the trade, talk it over with your buddies in the locker room, you know, say, hey, Blake Coleman got a big return for what he got from Tampa Bay, like, and discuss it. I think it just makes the game fun and the chatter a lot better.
Marty, I know it's tough to say, but what are your expectations for this year's trade deadline? Because I think you would agree there maybe aren't as many big names as there were last year when you had Artemi Panarin's name out there. And obviously Mark Stone was a player that Vegas acquired. A lot of Jets fans here wanted Stone to be acquired because he's from Winnipeg, of course. The big name out there right now is Chris Kreider. Most people expect Kreider to be dealt. But do you think maybe a player like Tyson Barrie is going to be dealt? Or maybe even you hear Ilya Kovalchuk might be a rental for somebody. What are your expectations? And are you preparing for the return of the T-shirt gun?
I am not preparing for the return of the T-shirt gun. I just actually, we did 2000 night here at the Buffalo Sabres the other day. Like guys like Danny Briere, Brian Campbell, JP Dumont were back in the town. Tim Conley was here. And me and Andrew Peters, the host of our radio TV show here in Buffalo, we both got to shoot the T-shirt gun in the crowd. And I was very worried. That thing, when you're inside of an arena and you've got 200 pounds of pressure with a T-shirt, he wanted to shoot it at me. I'm like, dude, I know it hurts. I've heard about it because I shot somebody with it. And he was laughing, so he was trying to return the favor. I'm like, hey, I got my shot. Jennifer Hezer came back at me with the slime gun, and I mean, I had it all over myself. I still found green slime in my... you know, in the pockets of my suit after it got dry cleaned about 2-3 times. So I got what I deserve, and it's over. I don't think they will ever allow me to use a T-shirt gun inside the studios at TSN. Now, having said that, unfortunately, I think it may be a slow day. I think it will be great that there's been, you know, I listen to Dusty and all those guys talking about, oh, come on, save the trades for Monday. I like that there's trades now because it gives us something to talk about Monday morning. Hey, let's break down the trades even more. We have so many people in studio that's going to have different opinions on it. Let's have a debate on them. Let's talk about it. Who's your front runner for the next, for this season, for the playoffs? And so we get to talk about it. But I do think it's going to be a slow day. So, you know, I would think that maybe Sunday night, Monday morning, we're going to be scratching our heads saying, okay, what else are we going to do for the rest of the day? But we'll find a way. I mean, these people are pros. We're going to have a lot of fun. I think we may even be talking about cheating in sports in light of what happened with the Astros this year. So if there's no trade, then we'll be talking about other hockey things and things that matter, and it'll be fun.
Marty Biron covers the NHL for TSN. He also covers the Buffalo Sabres for MSG. The trade deadline coming up on Monday, and the Jets and the Sabres coming up tomorrow afternoon. Marty, thanks so much for joining us. Always appreciate your time and insight.
Anytime. Have a good one today, and we'll see what happens tomorrow between the Jets and the Sabres. It should be a fun one.
Absolutely, Marty. Thanks very much. When we come back, we talk about some of the trades that have gone down so far throughout the Western Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Honestly, I don't think we've thought or talked too much about it. We're focusing on trying to win hockey games. We're in a fight to get in the playoffs and keep moving up in the standings. So I think that's our main focus, really. Me personally, I haven't thought too much about it.
It's Calgary Flames defenseman Michael Stone. He hasn't thought that much about the trade deadline. The Flames should think about winning more on home ice. I think I saw something that flashed on the screen here in studio. 1-6-1 on home ice the Flames are over the last 8 games. It's not going to get it done. They're fighting tooth and nail with the Jets and the Coyotes, some of those other teams for the final playoff spots in the Western Conference.
You know what a great song is? Audio Slave, Like a Stone.
You're just full of the randomness today, aren't you? Have you figured out what TikTok is yet?
No? It's 10-second videos. It's like Snapchat. Like, what's the difference between TikTok and Snapchat and all this other stuff? Like, I don't care.
I don't know. Wait till your kids are teenagers.
I use Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Like, that's good enough for me. And Facebook is probably the platform I use the least. Like who? Like,
and you, which is ironic because I believe your Facebook name is actually Ezra Zuckerberg.
Facebook is like the notepad of social media.
Yeah, you used to be Ezra Ginsberg on Facebook, and now you're Ezra Zuckerberg.
No, I used to be Ezra Zuckerberg as a joke.
Oh,
now I'm Ezra Ginsberg.
Oh, you're back to Ginsberg.
They said that I had to change it because I don't know. Maybe people thought I was Mark Zuckerberg's cousin or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but you're not.
Or because it's not really your name.
Yeah. No. Or that, Dave. It's one or the other. I mean, who's to say? This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
I'll tell you this much, that Jason Zuckerberg trade is looking pretty good for Pittsburgh.
That was clever. Not that clever, but it's sort of clever. I mean, I think there's people right now who are thinking, hey, who's Jason Zuckerberg? Because that's exactly what I was thinking for a brief second there. Anyways, let's talk about some of the other trades that have gone down so far as we approach Monday's trade deadline. Let's start with Vancouver's acquisition earlier this week of Tyler Toffoli. They get him from the Los Angeles Kings in exchange for Tim Schaller, Tyler Madden, he's a young prospect, a 2020 second round pick, and a 2022 conditional fourth round pick.
And by the way, Tyler Madden is the son of former Devil two-time champion, John Madden.
Well, as long as you got your Devils reference in to meet your weekly quota, then you're doing
Drew,
okay.
You remember the line. It was John Madden, Sergei Breland, Jay Pandolfo.
I remember it vividly. Let's talk about the acquisition of Toffoli. The price they paid for Toffoli, what do you think? You have to also factor in that the Canucks lost Brock Besser for probably the rest of the regular season. We know Michael Ferland is getting shut down for the remainder of the year.
That's really unfortunate.
His concussion. Yeah. He's had a concussion problem all year long.
Yeah.
So the price to acquire Tyler Toffoli, the fit of Tyler Toffoli, what do you think?
I thought the Canucks gave up quite a bit, and I get it, right? Because, you know, I think you mentioned this, Brock Besser, like, he's not out long-term, but he is injured right now, right? So did you mention him? Sorry.
I did. I said he's out for the rest of the regular season.
I only listen to half the stuff you say. So
is that the best?
So, I mean, you're replacing a little bit of that offense that you don't have in your lineup right now, and Toffoli is a guy that can play with Elias Pettersson, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is a good goal scorer, right? And, you know, it's kind of nice that he gets to be reunited with Tanner Pearson, so maybe they can bring Jeff Carter over there and reunite that 70s line, but... You know, when you talk about Toffoli, I mean, we know what he brings. I mean, this is a guy that can provide offense at 5-on-5 special teams. He's not going to move the needle, but the Canucks are a team right now that are in the fight in that Pacific division, right? Mm-hmm. Not only can they, you know, finish second or third in that division, they might win it, even though I think Vegas is ultimately going to win that division just based on the fact I think Vegas has the most skill, you know, of all those teams. When you talk about Edmonton, Vancouver, Vegas, I mean, Calgary more so is probably a wild card team. I really didn't like how they looked last night against Boston, but most teams don't look good against Boston, right? So, yeah, no problem with that. And, you know, you hear that Vancouver might be in the market for one or two other players. I don't know if they're necessarily
going to... You heard Wayne Simmons' name linked to him.
Right, and apparently the salary cap was causing them some problems there. But, yeah... Drew, I think Vancouver is going to be in the market for like a Wayne Simmons. Like Edmonton, we know guys. I mean, you've been listening to Darren Dreger, Frank Zaravalli. Like Edmonton has no money. Like they can't acquire like a Chris Kreider or someone who has, you know, a significant amount of money left. So that's why you hear like a guy like Tyler Ennis is maybe a good option for the Edmonton Oilers. But when you talk about Vancouver, yeah, that they've made their big move. Toffoli's a good goal scorer. And, you know, in terms of Vancouver's playoff hopes, like I still think they're a team. I don't really know what to expect in the playoffs just because not only have they not been there in a while, but I just don't see them as deep as some of the other teams, especially if they end up playing a team like Vegas in the first round. I mean,
that would be a bad
I'll probably take Vegas.
I would agree with that. Speaking of Vegas, they acquired Alec Martinez from the Los Angeles Kings for a 2020 second round pick and a 2021 second round pick. You know, does Martinez fit in on the Vegas blue line? Does he help them, particularly given that their problems mostly this year have been goaltending related and keeping the puck out of their own net?
Yeah, I mean, we knew the Jets were in on Alec Martinez, and you know, maybe you say that Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee maybe gave up a little bit too much to get Alec Martinez, and then you also hear that Vegas might be still in the market for a defenseman, right? Mm-hmm. And there aren't that many defensemen that are left on the market, but you know, Sammy Vatanen's name is out mm-hmm. there, right? Like maybe Vegas goes after him. I don't know if salary has to be retained, but yeah, Alec Martinez is a good solid defenseman. You know, has he maybe regressed a little bit over the last 2 or 3 years? Yeah, like he's gotten a little bit older. You know, what is he, 29, 30 years old at this point? But just a good, solid defenseman, I think that makes them better. And that's the thing, guys. We know what the market is. It's a second or third round pick for a top four defenseman. Mm-hmm. Now, are these elite top four defensemen? No. I don't think you're going to say Alec Martinez is elite. Dylan DeMello, maybe. I can hear that argument. Brendan Dillon, really like that acquisition. But that's the cost of doing business right now. Vegas is a win-now team. And as you said, they needed to bring someone in. And that's what they did. You probably give up a little bit too much, but that's what you need to do.
As an aside, you mentioned Sammy Vatanen of the Devils. He's an unrestricted free agent at season's end, left-shot defenseman. If you're the Winnipeg Jets, would you give up a second-round pick for Sammy Vatanen?
Well, then you're giving up your second, third, and fourth-round pick, right?
Fourth next year.
But you're giving up...
The pick to Vegas... The pick to Vegas is next year.
2021.
Yeah.
You're right. But you've already given up a third-round pick.
Does Sammy Vatanen fit on the Jets' left side of their defense?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could make the argument that Sam... No, I would definitely just say this, that Sammy Vatanen is more talented than either Dmitry Kulikov or Nathan Beaulieu, all due respect. I mean, Sammy Vatanen's a good puck-rushing defenseman. Mm-hmm. That just gives you more offense, right? And I think... I don't necessarily know that's a fit for the Jets, and I don't know if they want to give up another draft pick, but I mean, you hear Darren Dreger tweeted this out about 10 hours ago. I mean, he says that the Jets might not be done. So I think at this point they would probably be looking at a defenseman.
I think it's a left side defenseman. If they make another move at this point, to me, it has to be a left side defenseman.
Well,
right?
And you know, Dave had this up on illegalcurve.com that the Jets might be inquired on Vladislav Namestnikov. Mm-hmm. And you know, that makes sense, but I just don't necessarily know that that's a huge upgrade over Andrew Kopp, for example.
To me, it's got to be left side defense if you're the Jets and you're still making another move.
Well, but the other question is, you can't afford, really, in my mind, if you're the Jets, to be not making a hockey trade, because the problem is you really don't want to be in the rental market. I don't think you want to be in the rental market.
Fair.
So I would be inclined.
Or more so in the rental market. Right. You've already been in it.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah. Fair point. And just, you know, Jets show and everything. With Monday comes along, if you're pointing to anything Kevin Sheveldayoff's going to do, to me, it would be the left side of the defense.
Yep.
Time will tell. When we come back, Samantha Pell of the Washington Post is going to join us to talk about the Capitals. The Jets and the Caps have that home-and-home series Tuesday, Thursday, starting Tuesday in the U.S. nation's capital, the return match Thursday evening here in Winnipeg. Samantha joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, he's been playing to sold-out shows all week long, Chris Fairbanks. Tickets available at RumorsComedyClub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Washington Post, we're pleased to welcome to the program Samantha Pell. She covers the Washington Capitals. Samantha, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks. How are you guys?
Doing very well, Samantha. Appreciate you giving us your time bright and early this morning. Obviously, the Jets and the Capitals, a home-and-home series, Tuesday in Washington, Thursday back here in Winnipeg. But, so we want to talk about the Caps, and before we get into the nitty-gritty details, the trade deadline coming up on Monday, and the Caps have already gotten things started by acquiring Brendan Dillon from the San Jose Sharks. Why Brendan Dillon? Why does he fit in so well with what the Capitals want to do and a potential Capitals run in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, the Capitals were looking for a top four defenseman, and Brendan Dillon obviously has the size and physicality coming from San Jose. You know, McClellan, the captain and manager, just thought he really fit in well with his group. He's a really good room guy. You know, he kind of brings that aspect of the Caps need right now, and right now he is paired on the top pair with John Carlson, so he just brings that kind of added edge to this group.
Samantha, you've been writing about Alex Ovechkin recently, or you wrote about Alex Ovechkin for the Washington Post recently, you know, discussing how his teammates are just as much in awe of him as the rest of the hockey world, and obviously he's stuck on 699, and Jets fans are maybe hoping that he breaks that record against the Jets. I'm kidding, of course, but I mean, Is this going to be a bit of a relief for Ovechkin? Because I think it's pretty clear. I mean, you cover the team on a daily basis. It's pretty clear that Ovechkin doesn't really want to talk about it, and he wants to talk about team success.
Yeah, I mean, I think he definitely wants to get it over with. I think everybody's been kind of waiting for weeks now after he kind of went on that heater, 14 goals in 7 games, and it kind of sped the whole timeline up. But now, you know, he just scored his first goal after his 5-goal drought, and so today, later today in New Jersey, he'll try to get to 700. But yeah, I think he's definitely going to be able to get over it. It has been a distraction to the team. Well, you know, coaches have said it, players have said it. So I think everybody's just going to be happy when it's over and done with.
You know, Samantha, one of the players that I believe, if I'm correct, doesn't love talking about himself and his own success as John Carlson, but you can't help to talk about it because he's matched his points total from last season in 20 less games or 20 fewer games. So what have you seen from him this season, and is he willing to recognize how bright a year it has been for him?
Yeah, you know, I think it with John, you know, he's very humble. He'll be the first to say, you know, it's my teammates, it's luck, it's everything else except for me. But Carlson obviously has had a great season this year. He is the leader on the blue line. He, you know, got that A on his jersey. So obviously he is that number one guy. And I think for him, he's starting to realize that he is, you know, that guy. And very early on, he was a Norris Trophy favorite. And I think if he continues to have the season that he's having, he should be obviously the front runner and maybe even the winner.
Samantha Pell is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Samantha is with the Washington Post. She covers the Capitals. The Capitals and the Jets will meet each other twice next week, once in Washington, and then the rematch Thursday night back here in Winnipeg. Samantha, you look at the Capitals' goaltending situation, and it certainly appears as though Ilya Samsonov has been the better of the two goaltenders between him and Braden Holtby this season. Holtby, of course, an unrestricted free agent at season's end. So I guess a two-part question. One, is Holtby a member of the Capitals organization next season? And then two, is it Holtby's net to start in the playoffs with the potential for a quick hook if he struggles early on?
Yeah, it's definitely, I guess we can start with the first one. I think it's very hard for the Capitals to bring back Braden Holtby next year just with salary cap constraints. And obviously you do have Ilya Samsonov behind Braden Holtby. It seems like all season the Caps have been pretty consistent with saying, you know, Braden is our number one starting goaltender this season. He's obviously, you know, getting the big games, getting the big moments. He's actually kind of been back on a good streak these last, you know, 3 to 4 games or so. So he's back. You know, it seems like he's very strong. He's putting out solid performance after solid performance. So I would say he should be the starter game one in the playoffs for the Capitals. And for next year, I just think it's really hard for them to bring him back. But obviously, you know, Brian McClellan has worked some great deals in the past, and maybe he can get his right in to take another good deal next year.
You know, Samantha, you just mentioned Brian McClellan and, you know, swinging deals, and we talked about Brendan Dillon earlier and, you know, and John Carlson, and you look at the top four on defense with Carlson and Brendan Dillon, and then you put Dmitry Orlov and Michael Kempney, and obviously that looks like a pretty good top four. And then you hear that maybe a guy like Nick Jensen might be available, even though when he was acquired by the Capitals, that was kind of universally, you know, seen as a really good acquisition. Mike Green's name is out there. I'm sure that you've seen that. Do you see that having some legs? Do you think that the Capitals could acquire Mike Green, who obviously started his career with Washington? And in addition to that, is that maybe all you see the Capitals doing is maybe acquiring a depth defenseman? Or could you see maybe Brian McClellan going after a forward?
Yeah, I think, you know, starting with Mike Green, I think that name kind of surprised me. I'm not sure why they would add Mike Green in the mix. They have a lot of defensive problems right now, team defense on the blue line. I'm not sure what Mike Green brings that Nick Jensen doesn't bring at this moment. Obviously, Nick Jensen is available. I don't think the Caps have been shy of saying, you know, we're going to keep our options open. We're going to talk to a lot of teams. I do think that they are trying to add another depth defenseman, but it definitely would not surprise me if they add another depth forward as well. Their fourth line has been solid all season, but has struggled offensively probably in the last couple of months or so. So I would not be surprised if, you know, the Caps make one or two more moves before Monday's trade deadline.
You know, Samantha, are there any players coming up from Hershey that could be helping to augment the team as opposed to having to make trades?
You know, they have a couple young prospects. Obviously, Martin Ferravari has come up from Hershey on the blue line and played a few games. He kind of played three there, and the team sat one game each for Siegenthaler, Jensen, and Budis, just kind of trying him out on the top side, seeing how he fit in with the group. But it didn't seem like they liked exactly what they saw there, so they sent him back down to Hershey, and that experiment kind of ended. So, you know, they do have options depth-wise defensively, but I think the Caps this year are kind of all in. You know, they want to go out and they want to win another Stanley Cup, and they see their window kind of closing this year and next year, so I'm pretty sure they're prepared to do whatever is possible to get this thing done this year or next.
Whatever it takes for the Capitals to make a run into the Stanley Cup playoffs. Samantha Pell covers the Capitals for the Washington Post. Samantha, appreciate your time and insight this morning. Thanks so much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Take care, Samantha. Thanks again. When we come back, we look at the Eastern Conference ahead of Monday's NHL trade deadlines. Much more to come. You're listening to Birchwood Infinity Nissan, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
This time of year, there's always some nerves for certain guys. I personally allow the older guys to take care of that. We made a deal today. We addressed it because we made a deal, but I'm not in there trying to get in guys' heads or listen, play well when your number's up and the rest takes care of itself, and the business part of it, whatever happens, is kind of outside of all the players' control.
That's Boston Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy.
I had no idea who that was.
Well, there you go. It's literally in the show plan. I make this show plan, comprehensive show plan. It's got links, it's got stats, it's got news. Do either of you guys ever open it?
I do. I only look
at the big show plans. Like, because our show's only 2 hours today, I don't really look at it. And I knew we were going to be talking about the trade deadline. So I know what we're talking about.
It's true. You do know what we're talking about. You just don't know who's doing the talking. What happens if I had panicked and I had to leave the studio in a pinch? You would have been here saying, I don't know.
The show would be better.
Izzy and I would talk about our day. We'd see, but, you know.
We've talked about TikTok enough, I got to tell you.
We'd be going to Bed Bath & Beyond.
Yeah, see if there's enough time, you know, things like that. Anyways, welcome back to the program. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. It is an abbreviated version of the show because the Jets early start time. They get underway shortly after 12 noon. So right after us, it's Huss and Rick. They'll be joining you in studio, take you up until 11 o'clock when then Kevin O will do his thing and get you set for the Jets and the Flyers. And then we do it all again tomorrow as the Jets and the Sabres will do battle, a back-to-back situation. If I'm not mistaken, it's the final back-to-back on the season for the Winnipeg Jets, both these games today and tomorrow. Let's keep our look at the Eastern Conference trades that have happened and sort of talking about what we think might happen ahead of Monday's trade deadline. You heard from Bruce Cassidy, Bruins head coach. They made a big splash yesterday in acquiring Andre Kasha from the Anaheim Ducks in exchange for David Backes. That's more of a salary dump than anything else. Defenseman Axel Anderson and a 2020 first round pick.
Which is basically a second round pick.
Which is a late first round pick.
Did anyone else think of PJ Axelsson when they saw that name? Former Bruin?
I actually thought of Axel Blomqvist.
There you go. Former Manitoba Moose.
Jets draft pick.
Jets draft pick. And never played for the Jets, though.
I don't think so.
Yeah, he played for the Moose, though.
Mm-hmm.
But Axel Anderson is a good, solid Swedish hockey name right
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. And I like that trade. I mean, I'm not sure the direction that Bob Murray is taking right now. Like, obviously, the Ducks are not going to be a playoff team this year, but I don't know where they're going in the future. And you get a first-round pick, even though that's going to be a late first-round pick.
Yeah.
Right? I get that. So I like the return, but Andre Kasha is one of their most skilled players. Yeah. I really like that move for Boston because obviously David Backes towards the end of his career, and he's had a great career, right, guys? But I just don't know the direction that Bob Murray is going, because if you look at San Jose and LA, the other California teams, obviously, we know that it's been a rough year there in the state of California, but San Jose, I think we'd all agree, has the best chance of turning it around quickly.
Burns will do that.
Right, whereas LA is just stockpiling draft picks and prospects. Mm-hmm. And sure, yes, like I said before, you get the first rounder, but I would have thought that Bob Murray wanted to turn this around, like do like a rebuild on the fly. So, you know, Boston just gets another player that they can plug into their top nine.
Well, look, Andre Kasha is a very talented player. We know that. The big knock on him, or the big difficulty that he's had, is staying healthy. Yeah. I mean, only played 30 games last year. You know, he's only played 49 games so far this year. So he's been healthy for the majority of the season this year. But you know, that's the trick. That's the ticket. What are they acquiring? Are they acquiring a guy who's going to be healthy and who's going to solidify their top nine, or are they acquiring a guy who's going to be on the IR predominantly? And obviously you don't know the answer to that, but that's where the risk and the reward come into play there. If you're the Bruins, you've got to be just as happy that somebody's taking David Backes' contract off your hands.
Absolutely.
I mean, the Toronto Maple Leafs paid a first round pick just to get rid of Patrick Marleau's contract last year to the Carolina Hurricanes. To be able to do that and give up a prospect and get and get somebody back in Kasha, I think, you know, the Bruins have to be reasonably pleased with that turnaround.
Right. And, you know, I was mentioning, you know, the Bruins Flames game and, you know, the third line, Charlie Coyle, Carson Kuhlman, Anders Bjork, they connected for a goal mm-hmm. yesterday. That was actually the winning goal. Our boy Carson Kuhlman got the assist on Coyle's goal, but I don't know where he fits in. Yeah, right. And I don't
He's been back and forth between the Providence and
I don't know where Andre Kasha fits in because, you know, Krejci, DeBrusk, and Danton Heinen have actually been a nice second line. We know the big line of Bergeron, Marchand, Pasternak, mm-hmm. that's sticking together, right? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't even really matter. Like, to me, Boston has four really good lines. Like, they're a rare team. I think you'd maybe throw in St. Louis, Tampa Bay, that can really roll out that many good lines. I mean, the Jets are going to be there eventually, hopefully, with Perreault and Lowry coming back. But, yeah, just another skilled player for Boston who's already stacked.
Well, we know the Bruins are stacked. We know that their main competition in the Atlantic Division is going to be the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Lightning got in on the trade market earlier in the week as well when they acquired Blake Coleman, ex of the New Jersey Devils, in exchange for defenseman Nolan Foote, a young prospect, of course, and Vancouver's 2020 first round pick that they acquired in the JT Miller trade at the NHL draft. So Tampa gets Blake Coleman, the Devils get Nolan Foote and another first round pick. Your thoughts on this deal from both sides?
Yeah, I like the trade from both sides because Blake Coleman is obviously a really talented goal scorer, really sneaky player. And Nolan Foote, we saw what he did at the World Juniors. He's mm-hmm. got that elite shot. And obviously, it's unfortunate that the brothers get broken up there in Tampa Bay. But just a good trade for both teams. Again, Tampa Bay is stacked at forward, and they just get another piece, right? So whether, you know, Coleman is on the second line, top line, third line, it doesn't even really matter. He's just another skilled piece for Tampa Bay, and New Jersey just continues to stockpile, right? Draft picks, prospects. Like, New Jersey's in there with Detroit, L.A., Ottawa, mm-hmm. in terms of, like, the Alexi Lafreniere, Quinton Byfield sweepstakes, right?
Sure.
So, yeah, I have no problem with that trade. I think Tom Fitzgerald has done really well on this trade. And the Andy Green trade to me was puzzling because if you watched Andy Green play recently, like, it's a shadow of his former self. Like,
38 years old. Well, he's 39 years old.
And I realize that the Islanders have a bunch of injuries on the back end, right? And I get they might be a little bit desperate, but mm-hmm. I mean, you gave up a pretty high price there with the draft picks.
Let me rehash that trade. So the Devils, of course, they started off by making the Andy Green trade. So the Devils traded veteran defenseman, pending unrestricted free agent, Andy Green to the New York Islanders in exchange for defenseman David Quenneville and a 2021 second round pick. Now, I mean, I think a lot of people thought just on its own, the second round pick mm-hmm. was too high a price to pay for Andy Green. The fact that the Jets were able to get Dylan DeMello for that third round pick and Andy Green went for a second round
pick. Well, it looks like robbery.
This trade looks like robbery. This mm-hmm. trade makes me say, what is Lou Lamoriello doing? Is he throwing a bone to his old team in New Jersey with this trade? Because it didn't make a lot of sense when it happened. It doesn't make any more sense, you know, a week later when you sit back and think about it further.
Yeah. Absolutely not. No, and you know, Dave can get in here in a second. I mean, New York looks like a team that could probably surprise someone in the playoffs, depending on who they match up against, because they can end up matching up against Pittsburgh or Washington, right? Yeah. And that's probably going to be a horrible matchup for whoever plays Washington or Pittsburgh, but it's absolutely a high price to pay. But again, I mean, you see how desperate Lou Lamoriello is to acquire some defensive depth.
Well, I think he just wants to keep his team in it, right? I mean, they're in the first wild card spot, and you've got Carolina nipping at their heels, you've got Florida nipping, so you've got competition. I think he's just trying to solidify his group until they can get healthy again. And I mean, Drew, I agree, it's a bit of a high price to pay, but you know, at this point, you know, we talked about it with regards to the Jets. If you can get your team in, you never know what's going to happen. Of course, having said that, the Atlantic is
a lot easier
on the West to say that than it is on the East, but we'll see.
I like what Montreal did. You know, they acquired Marco Scandella for a fourth round pick
and then trade him for a second
from the Buffalo Sabres, and then they trade Marco Scandella for a second round pick to the St. Louis Blues. That's good asset management by the Montreal Canadiens.
And I actually don't think it's a shot at what Buffalo was not able to do. I think that Montreal got a St. Louis team that was desperate based on what happened to Bomeister, mm-hmm. that they knew that they needed to do something to augment their defensive group. And I think that, you know, that played into Montreal's hands. So, I mean, maybe Buffalo sold a little low, but I mean, you got to give Montreal credit in the sense that, I mean, they played the market properly.
Absolutely. And then the final one, Washington acquiring Brendan Dillon. We just spoke to Samantha Pell about that. Washington acquiring Brendan Dillon from the San Jose Sharks for that 2020 second round pick. We remember how well Michael Kempney fit in with the Capitals when he was acquired from the Blackhawks. Another move in that similar vein, just a solid professional defenseman to shore things up on a very leaky as of late back end for the Capitals.
Yeah, and I think the key is, and we've talked about this, is that the teams that tend to go on to win the Stanley Cup are the ones that aren't making major overhauls, because if you have to make a major overhaul to your group, there's probably something very wrong, flawed with your group in the first place.
Right.
So it's the teams that do these minor moves that seem to pay off, like, you know, Kempney did. And so I think similarly, you've got a player who's going to really, you know, add to your group in Washington and provide you that stability you need.
So what are you guys expecting for Monday? You know, obviously trade deadline day is Monday. Do you think it's really going to be a snoozer?
Yeah, I think so.
So a guy like Chris Kreider, I mean, the Rangers.
Well, but they started talks again.
Because they've been playing so well.
Well, that's the whole point. So if you're the Rangers, why would you deal this player who clearly likes playing in New York?
Yeah.
And your team is, you know, now that you've got the goaltending.
Yeah. I mean, right now they're making a run. Now, are they going to be able to pull it off? Well, they're going to have to make an incredible run over the final 20 or so games.
Yeah, they're still 5 points back of the second wild card spot,
but they're at least putting themselves back into the conversation.
Yeah, but Dave, I agree with what Dave's saying in a sense, but if you're Jeff Gorton and you're the Rangers, like, how much is Chris Kreider going to command on his next contract? $6 million a year, something like that? I haven't crunched the numbers, but, like, why would you give him that contract at this point?
I don't think the Rangers are far away from being a contender back again in the East, especially getting this kind of goaltending.
Let's not get carried away here. I agree with you on the goaltending. The goaltending has been
unbelievable. Look at their roster. Another season with Kaapo Kakko when he gets another year experience underneath him. You know, that Rangers team, to me, is a team that's certainly got the upward trajectory, and I think Chris Kreider fits in with what they're doing. It's not like he's 35 years old.
Right.
And
he'll be traded on Monday.
You think he gets traded on Monday?
He's number one on the trade bait board, Drew. Well, so it's not exactly
so
like
are
I'm
you,
pulling
we've
that
been
name
holding,
out of my
we've been holding on you for the last 11 years.
No, I mean, I don't think it's going to be as exciting.
So is cap space and a first round pick. So that trade bait board is a little...
it's not gospel.
Yeah, it's been flushed out. No, it has to be flushed out a little bit.
I'm pretty sure it's not a Talmudic text that is guaranteed or anything. That's it for the Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Anthony Sanfilippo, Marty Biron, and Samantha Pell. In case you missed any of their appearances, in case you missed any of the show, it'll be available on tsn1290.ca. It's on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's everywhere you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. Let us know what you think of the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.